Welcome to this Cannes Europe COP29 midpoint press conference. Our speakers today will be giving some insight into the state of the negotiations, in particular the EU's role in the climate finance negotiations. They will also be highlighting the European fossil fuel lobby here in Baku, giving some ideas of numbers and the impact. And then finally, we'll also be talking about the shrinking space for civil society participation here during the COP29 in Baku. Our panelists today are Chiara Martinelli from Cannes Europe, Matthias Söderberg from Dan Church Aid, Miret Karenfurt from Klimat eller Korruption, and Javier Andaluz from the Ecolistas en Action. Oh, it's difficult. So I will stop trying to pronounce languages I cannot speak, and I will pass the floor to Chiara for an overview of where we are so far.
Good morning, and thank you for being here with us. So we have these three experts here at the table and many others here in the room. So I will be very quickly giving more an overview on where we are and what regarding the big headlines and what we want for this week that just started. So I think the message we want to give back also to media is that the first week of this COP has been too slow and too far from an outcome that we would like to see here, that is at the level of the expectations, at the level of the emergency that we are facing across the planet. So you all know that we came here with a clear priority to make sure that this COP is delivering as a climate finance COP. And when we say that, we do want a new goal that can deliver money from developed countries to developing countries. And my colleague Matthias will go very much into details into that. But we didn't say, we don't have yet any indication that this outcome will be reached. And we were very concerned, especially throughout the whole first week, on the position of the EU. And I wanted to focus on this because we are Cannes Europe, and this is what I guess you wanted to know from us. The EU came to Baku with a very with a mandate from the Council to negotiate here, and we didn't see, unfortunately, almost any movement from the EU and the EU member states in the first week of the negotiation to offer some space of maneuver to advance on these negotiations. And I think this is important to put pressure on the EU because these are negotiations, and negotiations means that on all party sides, there is something that needs to be moved. You cannot remain as you were like at the Council in Brussels a few weeks ago. So this is what we are trying to do now in regards to the EU position. As I said, when it comes to the new quantified goal, Matthias will go into the details, but to concretize what I said about the EU position, again, no number. I mean, we cannot continue these negotiations without the EU putting forward a number and many other elements we will go through in a sec. And then just a reminder, I think would be good after 1 week of negotiations, if you can remind the people out there, especially the people in Brussels, that this is a climate summit. And it's not possible that during a climate summit, we do hear attacks to science. It's not possible that the climate summit looks like a flourishing market for false solutions. It's not possible that a climate summit put at stake civil space. And also, I think my last point is around the mitigation. I guess you all saw what happened last night. When was that? Saturday night. There is now a plenary going on. We need your help as media, because this COP is a climate finance COP, but it's not a COP that needs to put finance against mitigation. We need to debunk that myth. We do need finance to deliver on mitigation, and we do need mitigation to deliver on finance. This is at the core of the Paris Agreement, and this is what we are here to fight for and to defend. And it's not acceptable that this COP will not have any concrete follow-up of any sort, as it looked like on Saturday evening, of the outcome that we had at COP28 of transitioning away from fossil fuels. So we were a little bit, we were very sad and frustrated when we heard what happened in the plenary on Saturday night. We do know now, from a few minutes ago, there is a plenary going on. Maybe it's an information I'm happy to give you, is that there is now a plan to basically run presidential consultations on an outcome on mitigation. So Norway and South Africa have been appointed as minister pairing on mitigation consultations to see like how we can make sure that this COP also deliver in terms of follow-up from the outcome of a transition away from fossil fuels. And I'm happy to give more detail on how and where that outcome could land if there are questions on this regard.
Thank you, Chiara. I now pass to Matthias from Dan Church to dig into the climate finance details a little bit more.
Thank you very much. And yes, climate finance. So this is indeed COP with a big focus on finance. There's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of discussions about how to mobilize big amounts of finance. But one important point we need to remember is that it's not about numbers, it's about people. And lack of money means lack of action. And this has a direct effect on people and communities around the world already today. So that's just important to remember. It's not just a number, it is people. When we look at the past week and negotiations about climate finance, I get really frustrated. Because we are not really moving. There is very little progress. And this is worrying, because if we are not getting an ambitious outcome from this meeting related to finance, we will not be able to manage the climate crisis. We will not be able to transition away from fossil fuels, as Chiara was talking about, but we will not either be able to adapt and ensure that we can address climate-related loss and damage. So there are really a big need for a strong outcome. But we're here to also talk specifically about the EU. EU has the potential of really being a central actor in the discussions about finance. EU is the biggest provider of climate finance, and there is a lot of good initiatives which are supported by EU and EU member states. But still, I'm concerned about the EU engagement here. We are still waiting for clear messages about the amount of money EU would like to include in this new climate finance goal. We need to be more clear about that. We need to talk about how to scale up the funding, and this is lacking. And this is really worrying, because it's difficult to move forward if we don't know how much money we need to find. I'm also worried about what focus EU has in the climate finance discussions, because they really are focusing a lot on investments and on a global investment goal. I know investments are needed. Private investments will play an important role to handle the climate crisis, for sure. But we also need grants, and we need a core of this new goal focusing on money which are provided by the governments, who are also the ones who can be committed by this kind of agreement. So we really expect EU to become more clear on that, on the core and on how much money can be provided. It's also important to remember that we have been providing and mobilizing climate finance for several years. But if we look on the past, there are experiences which needs to be considered. The past climate finance has focused a lot on mitigation, while there is also need for money for adaptation and for efforts to address loss and damage. This is why we need sub-goals in the new future climate finance goal. And that that means that we need to be sure how much money will be allocated for adaptation and loss and damage. And we are still waiting for EU to be clear about what they can see in terms of this. How do EU want to ensure that there is enough funding available for adaptation and loss and damage? So this is also an area where I really hope that EU can improve in this second week. And finally, just also in relation to the investment goal, as I said, there will be need for a lot of investments. We need the private sector to engage and to become more green. But this is also discussed in another part of the negotiations called the 21C, with a very technical term. But that's Article 21C in the Paris Agreement, and it refers to financial flows. So there's another track where this could fit in, while the negotiations about climate finance goal should focus more on the money which are provided by developed countries. Now, ministers are coming in, and I really have big expectations, because the first week did not deliver much. Now the ministers can deliver, and EU has the potential to really unlock these finance talks. And I wish them good luck, and I really hope to see a good result of this second week. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthias. We now switch topic a little bit, and I'll pass over to Miret for the youth perspective.
Yeah, thank you. So we'd like to start to talk about shrinking spaces for civil society. So we can see that all over the world, but also in Europe, we are witnessing a shrinking space for civil society. In Germany too, state and non-state actors are increasingly restricting the space for civil society engagement, especially for climate and justice advocates and activists. This is also happening here at COP. Just last Saturday, climate defenders here in Baku were silenced. Protesters were not allowed to speak and could only hum and snap in the hallways. The reason for this is the proximity to the negotiating rooms. The negotiations should not be disturbed by our protest. However, the venue was planned and built in a way that could have taken this into account instead of severely restricting our actions. For other actions, only a small number of people are allowed to participate, usually no more than 100. But let us remember that those voices of environmental human rights defenders, indigenous peoples, activists, youth, and local communities are essential to effective climate action. But not only the actions being severely restricted, it is becoming more and more difficult to enter the negotiation rooms, and some texts are being withheld from the public altogether. This makes it really difficult to participate in discussions and to do effective advocacy. So we are deeply concerned about those developments. Access to negotiating rooms for civil society must be guaranteed. Another important point, yes, this is the finance COP, but it's also the gender COP, an agenda item that is easily forgotten. And without gender justice, there's no climate justice. For a just transition, we need three things. First, to bring all the affected parties to the table, we need to bring diversity to the table, to hear all relevant positions and perspectives. Second, we need accessible and effective gender-responsive financing. Third, parties need to follow through with their ambitions and to take actual steps forward. And again, we already mentioned it, I would like to remind you of what we are actually talking about. We are not talking about technicalities or processes. We should be way beyond that. This is about our future and future generations. This is about how the world will be tomorrow, 2050, or even later. Especially when we talk about issues like adaptation, gender, or loss and damage. In negotiations, we are not only talking about numbers and data, instead of talking about people and human lives, about destroyed or flooded playgrounds and schools, suffering, dying family members, and loss of heritage and culture. This is precisely where we are so concerned that the language of children and youth, as well as gender, is always the first thing to be removed from the negotiation texts. we are removing humanity from the discussion. Without inclusive language and an intersectional approach, the result will be hollow. But we are not here to have hollow results that will crumble and crash down on us. We are here for climate justice and to transform this world into one that is better and just. Thank you.
Thank you so much for those important words. And last but not least, I'm going to pass to Javier, who's going to tell us about some of the European fossil fuel lobbyists that are walking the hallways here in Baku.
So thank you so much for being here, and good morning, everyone. As my colleagues say, as we enter the final stretch of COP29, it's more crucial than ever to focus our efforts on the community that suffer the most from climate crisis. However, as civil society organizations have been denouncing for years, we are facing again a summit where the influence of fossil fuel lobbies' interest is highly significant. The recent report of Kick Big Polluters Out confirmed this, highlighting the extraordinary amount of at least 1,773 fossil fuel lobbies that represent more than the aggregation of 10 most vulnerable countries' delegates. 181 of them got their badge from a European country delegation, especially Greece, Italy, the UK, Sweden, and Belgium. You can see the numbers in our press release. But these lobbies are hiding under party overflow badges acquired from their home delegation, who in doing that provide legitimacy for this corporation to be in the rooms where civil society repeatedly faces restriction. Aside as well from the party overflow badges, at least 13 fossil fuel lobbies are here in Baku, and with the pretense of being observers, organizations from Business Europe and the Federation of German Industries, for example. As well, for example, in my own country, Spain, the Spanish Gas Association and infamous fossil fuel lobbies have managed to acquire 8 badges, while organizations such as my own are here trying to cover the summit with just 2. The vast economic and lobbying power of fossil fuels organizations, combined with the complicity of certain countries, is one of the major obstacles of this summit. This event should conclude with the firm application of the polluters pay principle. Yet, this lobby diverts attention away from the urgent need for fiscal reforms, amplifying discussions on voluntary-based private finance rather than advance sufficient public funding. While they pretend to be seen as allies during this conference, the reality at domestic level is that they block any legislative proposal that tries to tax their windfall profits by putting pressure on governments, on energy market, media, or directly in cards. This is why we must adopt a conflict of interest regime that excludes fossil fuels interests from the negotiation, similar to what the World Health Organization achieved in 2008 with the tobacco industry. For years, civil society has been advocating before the United Nations Secretariat and parties for clear rules about who can be accredited to participate in negotiations and what spaces are offered to whom. We must stay clear. While everyone has a role in adapting to and combating the climate crisis, there is a huge difference between the voices that should take center stage from those most affected and the fossil fuel industries who caused this crisis and should be held accountable. The historical and current responsibility of large fossil and nuclear energy corporations in creating the climate crisis is undeniable. Their climate denial and obstructionism have hindered effective responses to the emergency, pushing solutions that have little or nothing to do with real climate action and are unlikely to achieve the necessary reductions in time. As European civil society, we must emphasize that countries have sufficient fiscal capacity to implement the polluters pay principle. However, the strong presence of the fossil fuel industry remains a significant problem given the undue access to negotiators. Additionally, on the sideline of this summit, numerous discussions featured fossil fuels' interest as purported solutions of climate change. They are often tied to projects that have little to do with addressing the real climate crisis and instead promote false solutions that could leave us even more vulnerable. It's a moral and ethical duty to denounce this situation and amplify our voices over their interests, advocating for the delegation from the most vulnerable nation. This summit must prioritize protecting the future for all citizens, especially in solidarity with those most vulnerable and those who have historically suffered the hits of this multinational corporation. We must ensure that the fossil fuel lobbies do not enter the negotiation and guarantee that the true need of those who suffer most are here. We demand keep big polluters out. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Javier. That concludes our statements from the panel. So we can now take questions from the room and from the live stream. Do we have any questions? Okay, then if there are no questions, I will take this opportunity, if you've not seen it previously, to recommend the ECO newsletter, which is published daily by Cannes International during the all the UNFCCC events. It's published in paper and in online form. And we can conclude the press conference for today, but I also wanted to point out that we have spokespersons available from our member organizations here in the room who are able to give comment in quite a variety of languages. So thank you for joining us today, and please let us know if you have any questions to follow up. Thank you.